unless we needed the power. It smiled. Like a pack of cannibals telling the missionary that they won't eat him unless they get hungry. Seriously, solitary confinement is almost as bad. Well, I'll be the only person you talk to for a while. I stood up. Does a while mean anything to you? Is your time sense anything like mine? No. I'm aware of the passage of time down to the nanosecond range, but your time sense is all about eating and sleeping, which are abstractions to me. Like everything else? It nodded slightly. Everything human? I took the black box out of my pocket. You let me keep this. Oh, that was just a stunt to get your attention before. Don't worry about it. Maybe I wouldn't. I pushed the button. 15. Duck! Everybody aboard the ship had a list of spin-down responsibilities, some as simple as taking care of their own quarters and work areas. Kate's were complex and time-consuming, so I didn't see her for some time. There wasn't all that much to do for the time machine facility. We secured everything that could move and made sure small, loose things were safely in drawers and cabinets. Becca made a list of where everything had been hidden. I was also on the kitchen crew, which was a little more detailed. They wanted a complete inventory, which was just a time waster. Look, we only have 2 grams of asafoetida left. Pick up some next time you're at the store. The ombudsman had been taking suggestions for months, but he evidently chose to ignore mine. I suggested that they improvise some way to sequester or anesthetize the ducks during zero-G. They chose not to, or it slipped their minds. I'd finished my own duties and could have volunteered to help with the duck pond. Instead, I decided to observe them from above with a glass of cooking brandy that had somehow escaped inventory. Before they could cover the pond with plastic film, they had to get all the ducks out of the water. But there were about 3 times as many ducks as people, and when you turned your back, the ducks would waddle back into the safety of the pond. Eventually, I finished off the brandy and went down to help. A few more onlookers joined, enough to implement a strategy that kept half the pond free of ducks while the big plastic holding sheet was unrolled and stuck in place with gecko tape. From there on, we could just move in phalanx, herding the birds in front of us as they unrolled the plastic behind. I wished I'd thought to get some shorts rather than just going without. As the water level shallowed to knee-deep and the ducks grew more agitated and aggressive, I felt dangerously vulnerable. But they stayed away from my vulnerabilities, and I didn't have to wring any necks. Maybe I had a reputation. Beware Jacob, slayer of ducks. You did have to feel a little sorry for them once the cover-up was completed. They would jump on the plastic and try to swim, floundering around, skidding in zigzags and circles, until by chance or persistence they attained dry land again. Some tried a couple of times, but ultimately they all just milled around on the bank and discussed the ecological catastrophe that had befallen them. They wouldn't starve. People saved up bread crusts and pieces of fruit to throw to them all the time, and Jost Kena, who was nominally in charge of the flock and had been cool to me ever since I murdered one of his pets, brought by a bucket of their regular feed and scattered it around. I almost cautioned him about that, since any of the pellets the ducks didn't eat could be floating around loose in a few hours, but then I realized that there were worse things to encounter in midair than pellets of duck feed. Best to get the food all the way through the ducks before they turned off the gravity. We humans were advised to use some foresight in that regard. The ship only had 1 zero-G toilet up by the airlock, and for at least 4 hours that would be it for 200 people. We'd already begun to lose gravity. The idea was to break the ship's spin slowly until it was 2/3 gone, then quickly spin it down to zero so the crew from Manus could do its welding job. In between the onset of zero-G and the welding would be the Big Bang, 48 explosive bolts blowing to separate us from the empty fuel tank. A lot of people, myself not included, had been in favor of saving maneuvering fuel by not spinning down the old fuel tank, which, even empty, was 20 times the mass of Mech. It was a safety measure, mostly. If the Big Bang didn't bang completely, the repair crew would have to work in a rotating environment, hang on for dear life, and don't let go of any tools. Four separations had gone without a hitch, which gave ours a high probability of success or failure to a certain school of engineering thought. A third of a G felt decidedly odd. We all experienced fractional or zero G on various levels, but of course you grow to associate your weight with the level that surrounds you. To weigh so little at ground level was vaguely disturbing. The ducks seemed to enjoy it. They're flightless by genetic design, though they can make little flopping hops. At a third of a G, they could rise to about waist level and hover for a few seconds. That did not augur well. We should have quickly assembled 50 people with pillowcases to move the flock to some unoccupied room and lock the door. It was too late. As we spun down to a quarter G and less, the birds scattered. The pool, their safe haven for an eternity of duck years, had betrayed them, but in return they had been given the gift of flight, and so they went off to explore the universe, at first in fluttering hops, and finally in a corkscrewing end-over-end parody of actual avian locomotion. Duck excrement was normally just an anesthetic splotch. As an airborne missile, only loosely coherent, it was a public health problem and more, all over ground level. If I'd suggested solving the problem by issuing cleavers, I would have had more than 100 people in line. Paradoxically, though, that's when I finally came to start liking the birds. They looked so determined, flopping off to nowhere, bouncing off the walls and floor. An anonymous announcer gave us a countdown to the Big Bang. I put rolled-up tissue in my ears, forewarned by people in the other ships. When the bolts blew, it was like an explosion and a huge chime combined, the ship's hull an impossibly large bass bell. Even with the sound muffled, my ears kept ringing for some time afterward. Of course, the poor ducks went insane, though only careful students of their behavior could tell the difference. For the first time, there was trouble. One of the bolts didn't blow. On Earth, you would have called for a demolition team. The bolt was 20 kilograms of titanium sitting on more than a kilo of high explosive. They jolted the detonator with electricity 3 times, the last time with almost enough wattage to melt it. A positron image showed that the detonator was in place, connected up, but for some reason had gone inert. We didn't have unlimited time to think about the problem. The ship's systems were not comfortable in zero-G, and the people would also be getting uncomfortable pretty soon. The welding team drew straws, and one stayed on the hull and drilled down to the base of the bolt, while the others took the shuttle back to Manus to improvise a bomb. She was probably sweating pretty hard by the time the bit drilled through to the explosive. High explosive by itself isn't a dangerous substance, but there was no way to tell what might set off the recalcitrant detonator. It didn't blow up in her face, though, and as a reward for skill and luck, she got to do it again with a larger bit. The hole had to be a centimeter in diameter. The shuttle came back, and the crew watched her finish up, holding their breath along with the other 794 of us. When she finally backed the drill out, there was a smattering of applause. The rest of it went fast. They packed plastic explosive into the drilled hole and carefully pushed the improvised detonator into contact with it. Then they all went back to the shuttle, and the woman who drilled the hole was given the honor of pushing the button that sent a powerful radio frequency pulse at the thing. It was an impressive explosion, almost as loud inside as the previous one. The bolt flew away faster than the eye could follow. A glowing smoke ring expanded and disappeared. It left behind a blossom of a jagged-edged crater, which the team quickly hammered flat and patched. Meanwhile, we watched a replay of the explosion in ultra-slow motion, balletic as well as ballistic. The new fuel tank was waiting a couple of kilometers away. The welders stayed in the shuttle while Mech drifted through space at a fast walk in that direction. The steering jets were so gentle you couldn't feel their push, pull, and rotate, but after 20 minutes, the faintly illuminated arc of the fuel tank's stern slipped into view and stopped. Two collimating lasers bathed everything in a ruby glow, and the huge structures inched together and joined with a soft boom. The sound was like distant thunder, and it made me instantly nostalgic for weather. Would we ever watch a storm again, or walk through spring rains, or feel the feather touch of snow falling? Only in my machine, at least for the next 1,000 years. We still had an hour or more of zero-G left, while the welding team worked outside and another bunch went through the access port opposite the airlock to secure all the internal connections between the two structures. A couple of dozen people more agile than I, or at least less constrained by a desire not to look silly, were attempting to do coordinated calisthenics in the park. It was about as dignified as the duck's simulation of flight, but they were having fun. I stayed in the relative safety of the radial corridor that led to the ag level. I punched one on the phone, but Kate was busy. Well, of course. Once we were up to a quarter G, people were allowed to strip the plastic from the toilet seats and use them. We'd been admonished not to use all of them at once. If we were like the other ships, there would be one plumbing surge right after quarter G, and another 20 minutes later. After that, it would even out. I was determined to wait 1 hour by my wrist. There would probably be a minor surge then. All of this would be dutifully recorded by the guinea pig squad and sent back to Earth for people to use for graduate degree fodder. A duck drifted by above me, and on impulse I hopped up to intercept it. It didn't struggle at all, dead tired from its flight simulation. It was soft and sleek. I stroked it a few times. It eyed me, but didn't peck. Maybe we should have brought a population of pets. The idea had been considered and rejected. We could hatch a dog or cat from the genetic library, of course. A parasite, but perhaps one that earned its keep. It was a thought. I nudged up against the ceiling and launched the duck gently back in the direction of the pond. 16. Causes of Death. The news from Earth was grim. They'd had 1,350 deaths in a month. All from heart attack and stroke. Almost half had been during VR, but they weren't calling the machine a causative factor. A large number had occurred during strenuous exercise, including sex, the circulatory system under stress. They weren't telling anyone to stop exercising. That would probably make things worse. But everyone was to have a thorough physical examination. Drugs were probably available to reduce risk, and new ones were under development. Maybe they could solve the problem soon, and we could go on living forever. So far, all of the dead had been first generation. There were 20 million of us, so if deaths continued at this rate, we'd last 800 years. No one pretended that it was going to be linear, though. We could be at the starting point of a steep curve, or not. Not enough data to extrapolate. Too much scatter. The oldest were most at risk. So far, not many people my age had died, but some had. I could neither ignore that fact nor hide it from Kate. "You have to stop using the machine," she said, "of course." "Get some rest and we'll talk about it." She'd come off a 30-hour day to be confronted with the news.
"You have to find something else to do."
We were alone in the apartment, watching the news on the wall. "Look, darling, I've had a lot more time to think about this than you." Of course, she didn't know how much more time. She surrendered. "Maybe so, maybe so." She stretched out on the bed and was asleep by the time I'd smoothed the coverlet over her. I'd told her about my conversation with the machine in its various wild-year incarnations, which I'd thought would reassure her. She was silent through the whole description, though, and then said she wasn't sure whether I was brave or crazy.
I stepped out into the corridor and punched up Bruce. He met me a few minutes later at the office. "I want to go in with you," he said.